You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. It's Friday, January 13th of 2023. I'm your host, Alexis Kenyon. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, the deadline to enroll in Affordable Care Act health coverage is Sunday. We get an update on what people should know. After that, we get a story out of Durango about county staff and their resignation after accusations of racial intolerance. Finally, it's Sports Talk with Jimmy Searfoss and, as always, .org, our weekly look at local nonprofits. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour. Then, coming up on Connections, what is it like to live under occupation? And why is Israel turning away from democracy and away from seeking an accommodation with Palestinians? Host Joel Edelstein talks with two Palestinians and an American Middle East expert. As always, the phone lines will be open and your calls are welcome. At 9:30, Meredith Carson will bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music until noon on the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead this morning, but first, these headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
Denver Public Schools Board of Education directors voted Thursday to not renew the contract for Stry Prep Kepner, a charter middle school of just over 200 students in southwest Denver. According to the Denver Post, Superintendent Alex Moreo recommended the closure due to low test scores and that the school has a high financial risk. The charter school began serving DPS students in 2016. School board member A. Ante Anderson was the lone vote against the closure. Anderson said he did not disagree with the district's assessment that the school was underperforming, but he could not endorse a closure process that did not adequately include community input. Last fall, Moreo recommended closing 10 schools due to declining enrollment, but school board members, including Anderson, voted against the recommendation. The reluctant school board members said the district did not do enough to engage with families that the closures would affect. 18 former tenants of Summit View Inn, a 95-unit extended stay motel on East Colfax Avenue in Aurora, are suing the building's owner, Bear Co., alleging the company and its owner, Terrence Doyle, evicted them by unlawful means and in the process discarded valuable possessions of the tenants, including birth certificates and Social Security cards. Other lost possessions include family heirlooms, furniture, and medications. The company faced a similar lawsuit by three other tenants of the building who have since settled. The first lawsuit claimed Berco hired armed guards to evict all remaining tenants of the building by gunpoint in late 2021. Tenants say within the scramble of a confusing eviction done outside of proper court channels and being ushered out, they lost their valuables and the company did not respond to requests to retrieve their possessions. The former tenants also say prior to the eviction, the company took no action in correcting unsafe and unsanitary conditions of the building. Berco told the Colorado Sun the company acquired the building to improve it and to renovate it as affordable housing for veterans. The company said the lawsuit is driven by activist lawyers and is factually and legally baseless. The company's spokesperson did not respond to follow-up questions as to what claims were inaccurate. According to the Colorado Sun, the company has said on a recently removed internet videos, their business model is to turn over dilapidated buildings and re-rent the rehab complexes to new residents at or above market rate rents. Details about a federal grant that would expand Aurora's Prairie Waters project are expected to be worked out between the city and federal government over the next few months. KGNU's John Kellen has more.
The grant would bring Aurora $5 million in federal funding for a project the city says would recover enough water to support thousands of homes. The Aurora Sentinel reports that the grant would go toward an $11.5 million project to dig a new pump station and well, which would draw water from below the South Platte River. The pump station and well would be part of an expansion of the Prairie Waters project that, along with another well planned for next year, could double the amount of water the project recovers. City officials say any water collected by the wells will have passed through enough sediment beneath the South Platte to filter out pathogens and other contaminants. That means it would take less work to make the water safe to drink. The system would also be a buffer against drought. The federal government says Aurora is likely to receive the $5 million grant. For KGNU, I'm John Kellen.
A consulting group hired by the state released an assessment Thursday verifying employee concerns about negative workplace culture at the Colorado Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. The assessment provided several recommendations to improve the agency's work environment. The state hired the consultant agency in August after allegations surfaced that one of the agency's directors performed aggressive and inappropriate behavior. An employee complaint also accused the division's leadership of creating a toxic work environment with leadership bickering and yelling and showing a lack of respect and decency. The employee also said agency heads lacked budget transparency and failed to provide leadership and enforcement of policies. Many employees described the leadership in charge as dysfunctional, with the dysfunction trickling down the ranks and creating distrust and eroding communication. The Colorado Sun reports the consultants recommended immediate action to overhaul leadership and improve the agency's accountability. The Colorado Department of Human Services is warning that residents who receive benefits under the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, will see a reduction in their monthly benefit after February. According to state officials, federal lawmakers passed a consolidated appropriations bill just prior to the new year that ends COVID-19-related emergency allotments for SNAP participants. State officials say the program provides money to purchase food for close to 300,000 households in Colorado. They estimate the change will reduce individual benefits by $90 per month, or an average of $360 per month for a family of four. For today's weather, skies will be mostly sunny with calm winds and temperatures reaching near 52 degrees. Tonight, skies will be mostly cloudy with lows ranging from 28 to 32 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacey Johnson.
You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm Alexis Kenyon. This year, 4 out of 5 Americans are eligible for Affordable Care Act health coverage for $10 or less a month. That's thanks to increased subsidies in Biden's Inflation Reduction Act. About 11 million people have already signed up for 2023 coverage, about 13% more than last year, but nearly half of all insured adults have neither looked for information about the marketplace coverage or tried to obtain coverage. For that group, Affordable Care Act coverage open enrollment closes on Sunday. Here to fill us in on everything we need to know about the Affordable Care Act insurance is Laura Packard, a Denver-based healthcare advocate and founder of Healthcare Voices. Laura, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
So to start, tell me about the ACA deadline that's coming up on Sunday. What do people need to know?
Well, Sunday, January 15th, is the deadline to sign up. This is open enrollment, which means that anyone can enroll. And you can still enroll after the deadline if you have a specific reason, like you lost your job or you got married or a life change. But for most people, the deadline is Sunday.
Okay, so but for those who think they might not qualify or they checked it out in years past and didn't get any financial benefits or coverage, what should they know? Is there anything different about this year's coverage than years past?
Yes. So Biden's IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, it made health insurance more affordable through 2025. So for the next few years, and depending on your income level, it could be quite a lot. Premiums are capped at 8.5% of your income. And whether you can get subsidies based on your income and based on you not having good health insurance through your employer, those have been extended through the Inflation Reduction Act. So maybe in the past, a few years ago, you tried to get health insurance and it was just too expensive for your family. You can go back now, check it out, see how the prices compare, and plans are more affordable than ever for many Coloradans.
So enrollment is actually up this year, even before the deadline. It's up about 13% compared to where it was at last year. Why is enrollment up? And who is signing up for this coverage?
Well, it's 3 million new people. It's close to 16 million overall. That's nationwide. And in fact, it's record signups this year. And I think that it's a few different things. I think that the Inflation Reduction Act makes it more affordable for lots of people that couldn't get it before the pandemic. And also the Biden administration believes in the Affordable Care Act and is doing promotional work on it as opposed to cutting the promotional outreach efforts. So I think it's some better marketing, it's the pandemic, and it's that it's more affordable.
Are there any healthcare scams that people should avoid? I'm pretty internet savvy. And when I first started looking into ACA, I was confused. And then there's the state one and the federal one. So what should people know?
Well, I think it's good to start at connectforhealthco.com because then you know you're looking at Affordable Care Act plans. If you just go to Google and Google health insurance, you could see ads from maybe places that are less reputable. And one thing to especially beware of is health sharing ministries. Health sharing ministries are not insurance. It's a group of people, often religiously affiliated. It really isn't coverage at all. And you could find out, unfortunately, the hard way when something actually happens. So start at connectforhealthco.com and you know at least you're starting with reputable ACA plans.
Laura Packer is a Denver-based healthcare advocate and founder of Healthcare Voices. Laura, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
If you are interested in signing up for the Affordable Care Act coverage, the deadline is Sunday, and you can find links to that on our news website at news. Large-scale nationwide protests over racial intolerance in 2020 led many cities and institutions to examine their own structural inequities. One of those cities is Durango, Colorado. Last October, concerns about racial intolerance among city administrative staff led to the resignation of four members of the city's Community Relations Commission. Clark Adamidis of KSUT and KSJD looked into the past and future of the commission.
The Community Relations Commission was established in 2019 by the city to prioritize diversity, equity, and inclusion issues. At the commission's recommendation, Durango established gender-neutral bathrooms and started doing live Spanish translations of city meetings. And the city reinstated a bus route extension that served residents at the Westside Mobile Home Park west of the city. Here's Olivia De Pablo Lopez, one of five members of the commission.
A lot of these people don't have cars, people that are working-class communities, and the city graciously decided to return the route. And it was beautiful because the bus was filled with immigrants and also children. And they were chanting, "Si se puede, yes we can." It was beautiful.
But there was also tension over the commission's advisory role. Terza Camacho served as chair.
Whereas our involvement was productive, the only power that we have technically was to make a recommendation to city council, right? We could draft recommendations, we could talk about issues, we could leverage issues from the community. Ultimately, what the council does with that is whatever they choose.
On October 9th of last year, an employee at the city of Durango published a post on the city's Facebook page.
The city had a new staff who decided to post Happy Columbus Day. And of course, some of my colleagues and myself also were disappointed to see that.
The post had a quote from Christopher Columbus and a clip art photo of Columbus standing next to a ship. To many, Columbus is a symbol of Native American genocide. The post was removed within a few hours, and the city issued a statement on its Facebook page that there was, quote, no ill intent involved. But more criticism came in the weeks following.
My position is that I think an apology was made.
Here's Durango Councilmember Melissa Youssef at the city's November 15th meeting.
And I think it was a legitimate error. It wasn't intentional. It wasn't meant to hurt or harm. Apology was made by staff. It was corrected. It was taken down immediately.
But the Community Relations Commission demanded the city issue a formal public apology. The city declined. Here's Terza Camacho.
To botch it and then deny an apology and to not understand how dangerous that is in these times, it's a hard thing to stomach.
On November 17, Terza Camacho and three other commission members announced they would resign. Outside a coffee shop on Main Street, Camacho says resigning was the right decision for her.
It's very real to talk about what activism does to people of color, to their bodies, to their peace. The adversity was culminating to a point where I couldn't subject myself to it much longer.
But Olivia De Pablo Lopez decided to remain on the commission. She's currently the only member.
I decided to stay because, to the best of my knowledge, if we were all gone, the CRC was going to disappear. If you're here to be an activist, you don't leave. And although I understand there's justified anger and a lot of historical trauma, we also need to find paths for healing.
And this highlights the key challenge for the city of Durango. When it comes to social inequity and historical trauma, the path to healing is not easy or clear. For some, the Columbus Day posting was an egregious insult. To others, it was a simple mistake. Here's Durango City Mayor Pro Tem Melissa Youssef on the resignation of commission members.
I was sorry to see them leave on that note, which was unfortunate, but it didn't make a lot of sense of us to continue to focus on that one error. They did do some really good work for the efforts that they put forward.
Youssef says the city will decide in February how it will reform the Community Relations Commission.
Discussions have focused on making the CRC a community and region-wide commission that can represent the city, county, 9R, and FLC. The commission would be more effective representing the entire community.
As the sole remaining member, Olivia De Pablo Lopez is pushing the city to emphasize diversity in its new appointments.
I feel confident that the CRC will survive. And I feel confident that we'll get other people of color also to sit on. CRC is not going to disappear. It's not. That's my hope, and I'll do whatever it takes.
Elected city officials and city administrators can be sure that whatever decisions they make in February will be closely watched by four former members of the commission. For KSUT and KSJD, I'm Clark Adamitis.
Sports and Jimmy just make sense. Sports has six letters. Jimmy has six letters. Yes, it does. It's spelled with an IE, not a Y. Hello and welcome back to the very best sports show on KGNU, Sports Talk with Jimmy. I'm your host, Jimmy Sierfoss, here with the best sports stories and news from across the Front Range. 42 years. The University of Denver's head lacrosse coach, Bill Tierney, announced on the 5th that he is retiring from his 42nd season as head coach. And it's his 49th coaching lacrosse. That is an astounding amount of time for me. I can't even imagine what that even feels like. I'm only 20 years old. That career is over double the age of me. And there really isn't anything this man hasn't done in the sport of lacrosse. In the last 14 years, he has been the head coach of the University of Denver, and he has really elevated that program. Before signing with the team in 2010, Denver was a solid program, but he made them into a consistent yearly contender for that championship. As a pioneer, he racked up a record of 157-54, and he's taken that team to the NCAA tournament where he has gotten the chance to compete for a title 10 times in his time with the program. And he ended up winning that title back in 2015, and it is the first and only championship Denver has when it comes to lacrosse. And that championship was huge just for the sport of lacrosse in general. Before Denver won it in 2015, no team from the West had ever won a lacrosse national championship. It was strictly an East Coast thing. And that's all very impressive, but if you're doing the math, those 14 years are only a fraction of what his entire career has been. Before he was at Denver, he was at Princeton. And there he spent 22 years of his career, and if you thought what he did in Denver was impressive, what he did at Princeton sounded like it came out of a movie. You see, he had inherited a program that was at least decent when he came to Denver. That was not the case when he was at Princeton. Tierney picked up a program that was coming off of four straight losing seasons, and one that had never even been to the NCAA tournament. As a Princeton Tiger, he took them there 18 times, and he didn't win just one championship. He didn't win just two championships. In fact, he didn't even win three. He won five. In 1997, he went undefeated on his way to the championship. And in case that math still isn't adding up, when he first started out as a coach, he was at the Rochester Institute, where he spent three seasons and took the team to the NCAA tournament twice. But of course, you know, he doesn't just do college. He coached the USA international team a bit too. He He took them to the 1998 World Lacrosse Championship, where they defeated Canada in the gold medal match. In 2002, he was inducted into the National Lacrosse Hall of Fame, and 21 years later, he was finally ready to retire, most likely to the relief of opposing teams. Now he has one more season in him, and as much as there is glory to all his accomplishments, I'll leave you with this quote from him. "When I go to my grave, I don't want them putting on my headstone how many national championships I had. I want them to put on my headstone that I loved my players." And that is just about everything I've got for you today. Make sure you tune in next week here on KGNU for next week's episode of Sports Talk. I've been your host, Jimmy Searfoss. I'll see y'all next week.
Time now for .org, spotlighting the work of local nonprofits and co-ops.
.org spoke with Right Use of Power Institute's co-executive director, Amanda Aguilera.
Usually people understand power in a very dualistic way. We help people to navigate the nuance of power and recognize that power is not just something that's abused or misused, but it actually can be used for good. So people who are interested in using power for good, come to us and learn how to do that. Anyone can take part. We emphasize conscious ethics, not just following a set of rules, but really teaching people how to be in right relationship. Often when we think about ethics, we think, here's a list of things you should do and here's a list of things you shouldn't do. But in the moment with human beings, we're complex. And so our relationships are complex. So being able to understand what's happening in the moment, especially in terms of the power dynamics at play, it can be helpful to have principles to work from rather than rules. What we do is help people to understand what's happening in terms of power and navigate those dynamics. There's a whole bunch of people who want to use power for personal gain. Certainly you can use power for personal gain, but does it also benefit others is the question. We look at what is collectively the best way to use our power. I think what people get from the training, consulting, and the other services we offer is really learning to have more awareness and the ability to actually talk explicitly about what's going on in relationships in terms of power, which is such a valuable thing. You can't really shift power relationally unless you can talk about it. And there's so many different types of power that people don't know about. And so it becomes a lot easier to talk about and then shift those power dynamics in a relationship if you have that language and the framework. Most of our programming is experiential, so we help people to really experience the material instead of just learn it cognitively, which helps integration at a deeper level. One of the types of power, which is called personal power, we're all born with the ability to have an effect or influence, but it also shows up in relationship. There can be a power differential inside of a relationship, either by a role or through status. Those are two other different types of power. And then we could talk about collective power and systemic power and dimensions of power. So when you become more fluent in that language, then you can start to better understand what's happening, both inside yourself with your own personal power, but also in relationship. We offer training programs, self-paced on our learning management system, live training, both virtual and in person. We have consulting with organizations. A lot of issues that organizations face really boil down to power dynamics. We also offer one-on-one coaching around power issues. Using power wisely and well is about standing in your strength while also staying in your heart.
For more information, go to rightuseofpower.org. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
You've been listening to KGNUs.org. For more information on this organization or to listen to other episodes, please go to news.kgnu.org.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Alexis Kenyon. Thank you to Stacey Johnson, John Kellen, Jimmy Searfoss, and Shannon Young for all their help with today's program. Up next, it's Connections with host Joel Edelstein. That's after these headlines from the BBC.